So this will be a good weekend, well, half of it anyway, to enjoy the outdoors in October's autumn fullness. Maybe there's a state park near you. Oregon State Parks celebrate a big birthday next year, 100 years of Oregon State Parks. When you remember that Oregon's been a state for more than 170 years, you might wonder why it took so long to start parks. For the answer to that and for details of the centennial celebration, we turn to Chris Havel, the Associate Director of Oregon Parks and Recreation. Welcome back to The Exchange.
Good day.
Good to have you. Christina Sweet is with us as well, the Oregon State Park historian. Christina, welcome.
Good morning.
And let me start with you. Christina, my first response was, gee, only 100 years old?
Yeah. I think for a lot of times, state parks kind of developed out of this whole conservation movement that started in the 1920s. You know, we've always had special places, but didn't really start setting them aside for protection until the 1920s.
Well, this really starts with driving on the beach, as a lot of things in Oregon apparently do.
Yeah, so back in the 1913, the Governor Oswald declared that the beaches should be a highway, consider a state highway, a way to preserve and protect the beaches. And kind of from there, kind of grew out the whole state park system. In the 20s, there was this whole good roads movement in Oregon where they were trying to preserve, get things out to the marketplaces, and they said, hey, you know, we need places for people to stop along the sides of the roads. We need rest areas. We need to preserve some of this scenery that we have on the side of the roads. And sort of from that came the state park system.
So cars really had a major role, it sounds like, in creating Oregon State Parks.
Very much. For many years, we were very much tied with the Oregon Department of Transportation all the way up to 1989. But initially, state parks, were only allowed on the side of the roads. So that's why a lot of our state parks are very close to a lot of highways and things, because that was initially where they were.
That makes perfect sense. Sure. You know, if they're supposed to be, off to the roadside, then there we are. You mentioned 1989. Was there a Parks and Recreation Department before that?
There was, but we were underneath the Oregon Department of Transportation. And we became our own agency in 1989 and 90.
Yeah, very recent then. So, Chris Havel, give the scope and scale now. It seems like, especially on the coast, you can't go more than a few miles between state park properties.
Yeah, a good more than half of the park system, just slightly more than half, is on the coast. Yeah, owing both to our lineage's highway system and also to the foresightfulness of early political leaders, especially Governor Oswald West, who saw the development pressures coming and saw what was going on in our neighboring states and said, I'm going to keep that from happening in Oregon. Now, he didn't use the word park when he made that declaration. He was more interested in convincing the Oregon legislature that to preserve transportation, the beach would be necessary. So he declared the beach a highway. And that kept people from sort of staking claims on it or trying to interrupt people's use of it. And that designation as a highway lasted right up through the Beach Bill in 1967, when you started seeing more of a push for recreation development in the state park system.
All right, so that really did make the Beach Bill possible, really, was holding that land for public use.
Oh, absolutely. If that foundation hadn't been laid in 1913... it's hard to say what Oregon would look like and what the state park system would look like. I think fair to say it would be completely different, maybe even unrecognizable to us now.
So talk about the state park system. I mean, since it became its own thing in 1989, 1990, what has it done about expansion? Is there a particular kind of property that state parks are aiming for? Are they starting to move a little further away from major highways?
Yeah, that is a really good question. And that that sort of move away from highways does predate our separation from the Department of Transportation. But yes, our commission sets priorities for acquisitions, and we look at now a whole host of things. And access is still important. It's one of the things that separates the state park system out from, say, the U.S. Forest Service or the Bureau of Land Management, those federal agencies that manage a lot of wilderness areas, where it can take a fair bit of technical skill and knowledge in order to really sink your teeth into recreation on those properties. The state park system, on the other hand, values accessibility and preservation of natural spaces and historic spaces. So we look at the state park system as it is now, where's the need, and what are we missing from the state park system? What sort of experiences for people do we really want to provide? And that's led in recent times to continued acquisition on the coast, oddly enough. You would think that, aren't there enough parks on the coast? There are places, right, where the need is still acute, and we need to be able to serve more people. But also it's led to some signature acquisitions inland. Cottonwood Canyon is probably the best example of that. And I'll pause for a moment while you rack your brains. Where's Cottonwood Canyon?
I was wondering.
It's on the John Day River near the northern border of Oregon, and it's a large property, 8,000 acres. And for people who are used to recreation, that doesn't sound very large. You could take the entire state park system and pack it all into a ball, and it would fit inside the borders of Crater Lake National Park. But that acquisition is a large open landscape where it's developed on one side and gradually less and less developed as you move north through the park. And it's a good example of that kind of filling of needs that we still look for.
Wait, let me get that comparison again. All of the state park acreage could fit inside Crater Lake National Park?
With plenty of room to spare.
Wow.
Crater Lake is 190,000 acres or so, and the state park system is less than 120,000. All across the state, just broken into a lot of pieces.
Mm-hmm. Chris Havel is Associate Director of Oregon Parks and Recreation. Christina Sweet is the Oregon State Park Historian. We're talking about state parks generally and the centennial coming up next year, more specifically as we go through the conversation here, which you are welcome to join. Questions about state parks, observations about your experiences with them are welcome here on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 on the phone, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Christina, what was the first state park by that name?
So the state park, the first one was Sarah Helmick State Park, which we got in 1922, which sits, it's about, I don't know how many acres, about 20 acres, I think, Chris. But it was donated initially by Sarah Helmick, set aside, which she was an Oregon pioneer, claimed land with her husband under the Donation Land Act, and was, I think, 102 when she donated, or around 100 years old when she donated the property to State of Oregon.
And where is it? Is it still in use? And what is on the property?
It's still in use. It's a day use park. It is, it's south of, my brain just lost where it's south of.
Yeah, that's okay. It's just south of Monmouth on the Lucky Newt River. So it's in the Mid-Willamette Valley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So after Sarah Helmick's donation and this becoming a state park, I mean, it sounds like it still took the state a while to get a really full-blown parks program going.
Yeah, definitely. It really kind of just languished there. You know, we acquired little pieces, acre here and there, for many years, up until about 1929 when Sam Boardman was hired as the state parks director. And from him, it really took off under his leadership in terms of acquisition of properties. We kind of call him the father of the state park system.
That explains why there's a Samuel Boardman State Park on the Oregon coast.
Yes, there is. So, and he acquired probably the majority of all our property was during his tenure from 1929 to 1950.
Wow, that is a long tenure, 21 years.
Very much so, yeah.
Okay, so what, maybe by half or more of the park acreage because of Sam Boardman?
It kind of skewed a little bit because of Cottonwood being so large, but I would say, I don't know if you have a number, Chris, how many percentage-wise, but I would say probably over half was acquired during his time period.
And as state parks property was acquired through the years, who was it acquired from?
A whole range. Sam Boardman was very good at convincing people to donate land. They called him the magnificent beggar. He would convince people that here's the best way you can preserve your name and this property that you love, or the scenery, this piece of history that you love, was to donate it. They didn't have a lot of money early on, so it was either a lot through either purchases, through donations. There was some condemnations done throughout the years.
Chris Havel, give the modern perspective. I mean, you mentioned 120,000 acres of state parks. I mean, how many are day use? How many provide some camping? How many campsites? Just some key numbers there.
Yeah, so there's we have more than 50 parks with overnight accommodations of some sort. That might surprise some people. It's easier just to say we have more than 50 campgrounds, but there are also a couple of historic inns. You've got one down there in Southern Oregon at Wolf Creek Inn, right off the freeway. That's a state park. There's another historic inn in French Glen in the southeast corner, and then campgrounds spread around the state. And nearly 6,000 campsites across those. But given the history of the park system, some people come into our campgrounds and say, wow, these are fairly close together. Oftentimes that was out of necessity because the parks were so small and they had to be within 300 feet of the highway in the early days for acquisition. So we do have tent camping, RV camping. We brought the concept of glamping really to the forefront in the 90s when we added yurts. There's a sort of a cult-like fan base around yurts in the state park system now, and it's spread across the country. And for those of you who have not yet discovered the yurt, these round, soft-sided cabins modeled after Mongolian tents that have beds and heat in them, that was really a step along a line that was laid down early in the 50s. One of the things, as I said earlier, that sets the state park system apart is this need for making it accessible and easy for people to have the experience. And that's what led to the development of a lot of RV camping and installation of showers and, you know, clean restrooms throughout the system. Yurts are sort of an extension of that. But so out of our 200 or so properties, 50 offer camping, and the rest are, as Christy was describing, these day-use parks. Sarah Helmick is a good example of that, where you've got a picnic area, covered shelters, often a small trail system, and just a place to reconnect with the landscape that makes Oregon, Oregon, and sort of get into the feeling of, you know, what it's like to be an Oregonian and to let loose of some of the cares that you've got in your daily grind. And sort of sink into this comfortable space. That said, there are some, you know, spectacular, challenging landscapes in the state park system where if you want to burn your legs a bit and go on a long, strenuous hike, we've got places for that too.
Chris Havel is Associate Director of Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and Christina Sweet is the State Park Historian. We're talking about state parks generally and specifically about the big centennial coming up to be celebrated next year in 2022. You're welcome to join in at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Christina, I noticed some interesting stories about some individual park acquisitions, like Casey State Park on the Rogue River downstream from Lost Creek Lake. It apparently took some work and time to figure out ownership there. I don't know if you're aware of the story specifically, because apparently Mr. Casey himself was squatting on the land.
Oh, yes. And that always yes. Casey's an interesting, which isn't unusual, you know, when Boardman's going around trying to convince people to sell land or purchase land from people, you know, places run into where people didn't quite want to sell. Or in the case of Casey, I think what they did is they ended up hiring the gentleman who was squatting on the land as the park kind of caretaker to take care of the park as a way to give him kind of a life estate on the property till and give him a job with it too.
Wow. So all kinds of ways. Once again, the work of the magnificent beggar, Sam Boardman, from 1929 to 1950, head of Oregon State Parks. So, Chris, about the celebrations then for the centennial, what are the first events happening?
Yeah, so we do start off with our big statewide event right on January 1st. There's a first day hike that we've been doing for the last several years, joining other state park systems across the country. And right from that moment all the way through the year, you can expect us to offer other special events through the state park system. Watch our website and follow us on Facebook for those. Some of those will be celebrations just of the state park system itself, and some of them will just be things that we add on to some of our existing events to remind you of the centennial. We are also going to be offering volunteer opportunities from Sarah Helmick's first donation in the 1920s right up through the current day. The state park system really relies on support from people, you know, places aren't parks until you put people in them. And it's not just people using them, but people giving back and making sure that they stay healthy. So we are lining up 100 volunteer events around the state to celebrate our first 100 years. You can look to jump into those too. We'll also be offering some online activities and opening up the doors for people to share their memories with us, their photos, their stories around with their experiences around the state. And we're really looking forward to hearing that. We tend to get those year-round anyway from people, just sort of unsolicited, saying, yeah, I had this great time. And now we really want people to reach back and, you know, share memories growing up. Or if you're a recent visitor to the state, you know, what you first thought when you came into a state park. So those online activities, the special events, and then the volunteer events will help us round things out.
All right, a bunch of things going on for the 100th birthday. So just a question before we go, Chris, about the general state of the parks. Is this a happy birthday? Are Oregon parks in reasonably good shape? Are they underutilized by the pandemic, understaffed, anything like that?
Yeah, wow, great. Because I think the Oregon has always struggled with this, what are parks for and how are we going to do them type questions. And yes, fortunately now we're in pretty good shape, especially compared with park systems around the country. We're not tax funded though. We're funded by the fees people pay when we provide them service and a share of the Oregon lottery and a share of recreational vehicle license plate fees. Is that enough to keep us going and growing and providing service where Oregonians need it? I don't think that's a settled question. And yes, the centennial is a time to celebrate, but it's also a time to reflect on what we want from our public spaces and how we're going to do it. So we're going to, we don't want to, you know, put this blanket, you know, over the whole thing and say, no, no, this is serious. You got to think about the future. You do have to think about the future, but we think it can be with a sense of joy with what we've accomplished. Now let's figure out how to make it even better in the next 100.
Okay, so a party coming, but some work involved as well, and in some cases as part of the celebration to fix up the parks. Chris Havel is the Associate Director of Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and Christina Sweet is the State Park Historian. Thank you both for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Right, good to have you both here, and happy birthday, happy 100th birthday, Oregon Parks, next year.